If you would like to turn to the book of Hosea. First of all, I need to apologize to you mothers. When I was asked if I would speak today, I said yes, that I would be glad to. But I forgot that it was going to be Mother's Day. But those of you who have known us for as long as you've known us, that there isn't anything that I could say as far as mothers are concerned. You're wonderful, you're great, and the Lord bless you for being mothers and taking care of us, not only your children, but your husbands as well. And certainly we all can thank God for mothers. And when I told my wife what I was going to speak on this morning, she kind of looked at me and said, "Well, I don't know." And in other words, the book of Hosea, and introducing the book of Hosea, I want to give you a little background to the book, because once you get the background, then you begin to understand the message of Hosea. He was a prophet to the northern kingdom. Now remember, the kingdom, the 12 tribes of Israel, were one time together. But during the reign of Rehoboam and Jeroboam, they divided. The 10 tribes of the north, the 2 tribes of the south. And the dates of those kings cover approximately 128 years. Hosea himself exercised his ministry perhaps close to 70 years himself. And so it was in one of the darkest periods of Israel's history that Hosea came along to preach the word that God had given to him. As we look at the 4th chapter, beginning in verse 1, "Listen to the word of the Lord, O sons of Israel, for the Lord has a case against the inhabitants of the land, because there is no faithfulness or kindness or the knowledge of God in the land. There is swearing, deception, murder, stealing, and adultery. They employ violence, so that bloodshed follows bloodshed. Therefore the land mourns, and everyone who lives in it languishes, along with the beasts of the field and the birds of the sky, and also the fish of the sea disappear." And so you look at the background. In fact, Israel itself was on the way into captivity. They had gotten so wicked in their ways, as those verses that I just read would indicate. And finally, they did go into Assyrian captivity in 722 B.C. Now, the story itself is a tragedy in Hosea's domestic life, in his family life, which colors, to me anyway, all of the lessons, the messages that he sent to Israel itself. And they had a great influence on his understanding the heart of God. And I think that's one of the main messages in this book, is how infidelity affects the heart of God. And once we get that message, then our desire to serve the Lord comes from a different motivation. Not simply from the fact that, "Well, I want to go to heaven and I don't want to go to hell, so I'll be here whenever the opportunity is given. I'll be here and I'll serve you, Lord, but it's because I don't want to go to hell." The other motivation is this: "Lord, because of the love that you have shown toward us, and because all of the blessings that we have day in and day out, Lord, I want to serve you. I love you. And because I love you, I want to do your will." Two different motivations. And life has more meaning if we take the latter one. So what is the story? Well, we find in verse 1 that the word of the Lord came to Hosea, the son of Beeri, during the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah. kings of Judah, and during the days of Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel. What's the story? Well, here's the story beginning in verse 2. Hosea is commanded of the Lord to go marry a harlot. And as a result of that marriage relationship, they have three children. One of them named Jezreel, and the second one, a daughter, is named Lo-Ruhamah, and then the third child is named Lo-Ami. And each one of these names that are given, Jezreel, Lo-Ruhamah, and Lo-Ami, have a great significance in the story itself. As a result of that marriage, and as the years pass, his wife Gomer becomes unfaithful. And so in verse 1 of the second chapter, he said, "Say to your brothers, Ami, and to your sisters, Ruhamah, contend with your mother, contend, for she is not my wife, and I am not her husband. And let her put away her harlotry from her face, and let her adultery from between her breasts, lest I strip her naked and expose her as in the day when she was born." She becomes unfaithful. And finally, Hosea says, "Go your way and live your life." And the life that she lived in is described in these words. "For their mother has played the harlot," verse 5. "For she said, I will go after my lovers, my wool and my flax, my oil and my drink. Therefore, behold, I will hedge up her way with thorns, and I will build a wall against her so that she cannot find her paths. She will pursue her lovers, but she will not overtake them, and she will seek them, but will not find them. Then she shall say, I will go back to my first husband, for it was better for me then than it is now. For she does not know that it was I who gave her the grain, the new wine, and the oil, and lavished on her silver and gold, which they used for Baal. Therefore I will take back my grain at harvest time, and my new wine in its season. I will also take away my wool and my flax, given to cover her nakedness. And then I will uncover her lewdness in the sight of her lovers, and no one will rescue her out of my hand. I will also put an end to all of her gaiety, her feasts, her new moons, her Sabbath, and all of her festal assemblies. And I will destroy her vines and fig trees on which she said, these are my wages which my lovers have given me, and I will make them a forest, and the beasts of the field will devour them, and I will punish her for the days of the Baals when she used to offer them sacrifices, and adorn herself with her earrings and jewelry, and follow her lovers, so that she forgot me, declares the Lord." Now, the significance of the names. Jezreel. Jezreel means to sow or to scatter. Lo-Ruhamah, I will no longer have compassion. No more mercy. Lo-Ami, you are not my people. Now, as you look at those names have much significance. The story is not simply about Hosea marrying Gomer and having children. The story is an illustration of what had happened as far as Israel and their relationship to God. Now remember, God had made a covenant with them on Mount Sinai, and the people had all agreed, all that the Lord has said, we will do. Then in Deuteronomy, in the 31st chapter, God speaking to Moses just before he dies, and he tells Moses this in the 31st chapter, beginning in verse 16. "And the Lord said to Moses, behold, you are about to be about to lie down with your fathers." In other words, he's going to die. "And the people will rise and play the harlot with the strange gods of the land into the midst of which they are going, and will forsake me and break my covenant which I have made with them. Then my anger will be kindled against them in that day, and I will forsake them, and I will hide my face from them. And they shall be consumed, and many evils and troubles shall come upon them, so that they will say in that day, is it not because of our God is not among us that the evils have come upon us? But I will surely hide my face in that day because of all of the evil which they will do, for they will turn to other gods. So when we go back to the book of Hosea, and Hosea is told by God to marry the harlot, and the children that were born to sow, to scatter, God is telling them through this marriage and the birth of these children is that God had been married or was married to Israel. And what Israel was doing was what Hosea was experiencing through his marriage relationship. His wife had become unfaithful. Israel had become unfaithful to God. And because of their unfaithfulness, God was going to scatter them. He was going to send them into captivity because they were worshiping other gods. Before they had mercy from God, God was showing mercy upon them from day to day, week to week, year to year. But no longer was he going to have compassion. So the name is Lo-Ruhamah. Lo-Ami, you are my people. Ami means my people. Lo-Ami means you are not my people. Now, when you take this and you compare it to the New Testament, we know that the New Testament tells us that we are married to Christ. We, as God's children, the church, is married to Christ. In 2 Corinthians 11th chapter, the Apostle Paul says, I'm jealous over you for a God with a godly jealousy, for I have espoused you unto one husband that I might present you as a chaste virgin to Christ. In the Ephesian letter, in the 5th chapter, beginning in verse 22, he talks about the marriage relationship, the husband and the wife, how the wife is to be obedient unto her husband or in subjection unto him, and that the husband is to love his wife even as Christ loved the church and gave himself for it. But he also reminds us as he goes on down through that passage. He said this is a great mystery. That is the relationship between a husband and wife. But he said, I speak in regard to Christ in the church. We are married to Christ. And we are to be faithful to Christ, even as Israel was to be faithful to God. And thus, as we continue on in the story, that story is told rather bluntly. The first part of it is tragic. And it is not uncommon. In fact, yesterday, maybe you saw it on CNN. Adultery, infidelity. In our society today, it's become so common, so accepted, and so it isn't uncommon. The second part of the story is by no means common. It is uncommon. What did God tell Hosea even after his wife has gone out and done all of these things? Third chapter says, then the Lord said to me, go again, love a woman who is loved by her husband, yet an adulteress, even as the Lord loves the sons of Israel, though they turn to other gods and love raisin cakes. So I bought her for myself for 15 shekels of silver and a omer and a half of barley. Then I said to her, you shall stay with me for many days. You shall not play the harlot, nor shall you have a man, so I will also be toward you. For the sons of Israel will remain for many days without a king or a prince, without sacrifice or a sacred pillar, and without ephod or household idols. Afterward, the sons of Israel will return, and they will seek the Lord their God and David their king, And they will come trembling to the Lord and to the his goodness in the last days. So in Hosea's own experience, he discovered what infidelity means to love. Israel's infidelity had roused God's anger. But yet at the same time, you will see as the story continues, it caused God's heartbreak. When I go back to the book of Ezekiel, in the 16th chapter, Ezekiel talks about how God had chosen Israel. And in all of this, in my studies, and I'm sure most of you who study the Word with any intensity at all, you look at what is there in this for me? I mean, this is in the Old Testament. We don't live under the Old Testament, we live under the New. But there are lessons that we can learn. What did God see in me that he would want me? I look at myself and I can see things that I've done. Why would he choose me? Well, this is what Ezekiel is, a message that he's trying to get across to the people, and basically the same message as Hosea. He talks about then the word of the Lord, 16th chapter of Ezekiel. Son of man, make known to Jerusalem her abominations. As for your birth on the day that you were born, no eye looked on you with pity to do any of the things for you, to have compassion on you. Rather, you were thrown out into the open field, for you were abhorred on the day that you were born. What's he talking about? He's talking about the day that he chose the children of Israel. When he brought them out of the land of Egypt, he said, you were like a baby that had just been born. You hadn't even been washed. You were simply cast out in the field, and nobody wanted you. No, I looked on you with pity to do any of these things for you, to have compassion on you. When I passed by you and saw you squirming in your blood, I said to you while you were in your blood, live. I made you numerous like plants of the field, and you grew up and you became tall and you reached the age for fine ornaments. Your breasts were formed and your hair had grown, yet you were naked and bare. Then I passed by you, and I saw you, and behold, you were at the time for love. So I spread my skirt over you and covered your nakedness. I also swore to you and entered into a covenant with you so that you became mine, my people, declares the Lord God. Then I bathed you with water, washed off your blood from you, and I anointed you with oil. What he is picturing here is Israel, when he chosen the day of their birth, as they matured, the things that he had done for them when no one else would do it. I bathed you with water, I washed off your blood, and I anointed you with oil. And then he tells how he had dressed them with the finest of garments. But in verse 15, he says, but you trusted in your beauty, and you played the harlot. How did they play the harlot? Idols. Making covenants with nations, as was discussed in the class this morning, when they weren't to make any covenants with the other nations. They were to trust in God. And so as a result, he said, you played the harlot. Because of your fame, she had become well known because of the nourishment that God had given her. And you poured out your harlotries on every passerby who might be willing. And you took off some of your clothes, made for yourself high places of various colors, and you played the harlot on them, which should never have come about nor happened. You also took your beautiful jewels made of my gold and my silver, which I have given you, and made for yourself male images that you might play the harlot with them. And then he comes on down into verse 22, and he said, beside all of your abominations and harlotries, you did not remember the days of your youth. when you were naked and bare. Then you went ahead and you built yourself a shrine and made for yourself a high place on every square. You also played the harlot with the Egyptians, your lustful neighbors, and you multiplied your harlotry to make them angry. And he goes ahead to speak in regard to this. He calls them, Israel, you adulterous wife, who takes strangers instead of her husband. Who was her husband? God. Now you begin to see what Hosea is doing. What he is telling the children of Israel is, if you do not change your ways, you're going to be like Gomer. Hosea, go your way. And she goes her way. And how true this is. What did she do? Well, she said, I will go after my lovers who give me my bread and my water, my wool and my flax and my oil and my drink. Verse 7, and she will pursue her lovers, but she will not overtake them. She will seek them, but she will not find them. What's happening? Maybe you've experienced in your life, you would think, Lord, you know, those people out there look like they're having a lot more fun than I'm having. And I'm going out there and I'm going to live with them. But you see what's going to happen? It's going to happen exactly as it happened to Gomer. She went down that street because, oh, that looks good. She got down that street. It was a dead-end street. She went over that way, and she looked, and she didn't find anything down there that was satisfied. Oh, it satisfied for a while. Because, what do they say? The pleasures of sin are for how long? A season. Don't last. And so she tries this, and she tries that, and nothing. Nothing satisfies. Then what is she going to say? Then she will say, I will go back to my first husband, for it was better for me then than now. Well, the story goes on, and as a result of Hosea experiencing this in his own life, he begins to understand how God must feel with unfaithful wife, and in this case, Israel, the northern kingdom. If you want to know how he feels, sixth chapter of Hosea will tell you, beginning in verse 4. What shall I do with you, O Ephraim? Who's Ephraim? Well, Ephraim is in those 10 tribes of the north. You will find in the book of Hosea, Ephraim being used, but it refers to the 10 tribes of the north. In other words, I could say, what shall I do with you, O Israel? What shall I do with you, Judah? For your loyalty is like the morning cloud and like the dew which goes away. Verse 6, for I delight in loyalty rather than sacrifice, and in the knowledge of God rather than burnt offerings. But like Adam, they have transgressed the covenant. There they have dealt treacherously against me. As a parent, I'm sure that most of you, if not all of you, have not at times had this compassionate, angry, upset feeling. And you might have said, oh son, oh daughter, how my heart aches. What shall I do with you? What can I do with you? And there shows you what infidelity does to love. It creates heartbreak. Bringing it down to us today, we have been espoused to Christ, that we might be presented as a chaste virgin to Christ. That he's going to present the church without spot and without blemish to God. Do you see what love does, or what infidelity does to love? And so as the story continues, you will find, and tonight, Lord willing, I will bring the lesson, because I knew I couldn't get it all done this morning, is an open door, a door of hope. And that door of hope is expressed in the last three verses, or two verses of Hosea 1, and the first verse of chapter 2. And here it is. Yet the number of the sons of Israel will be like the sand of the sea, which cannot be measured or numbered. And it will come about that in the place where it is said to them, you are not my people, it will be said of them, you are the sons of the living God. And the sons of Judah and the sons of Israel will be gathered together, and they will appoint for themselves one leader, and they will go up from the land, for great will be the day of Jezreel. Now the sowing here is the bringing back together of Israel and Judah, but not only that. It's referring, as does Peter in the first letter, and in the fourth chapter talks about, we are the people of God. You know, Gentiles were not included under the old covenant, but they are under the new. And Paul mentions this in the Roman letter, that this is a part of God's plan. We who were not God's people are now the people of God. And so he says in chapter 2, verse 1, say to your brothers, Ami, and to your sisters, Ruhama. Now, what's he saying? Well, it's no longer Lo Ami, nor is it no longer Lo Ruhama. It's Ami. Mercy will be extended again, and Ruhama, you are my people. Now, we know that we can interpret God by the experiences that we have had. Have you ever sit down and you begin to think in regard to events that have taken place in your life? What if my father could have worked for Boeing in Seattle during World War II? We live in Nebraska. And I often had thought, what if we'd have moved to Seattle? I wouldn't have known Hope. She wouldn't have known me. We wouldn't have four children. Well, I'd have probably got married, but to whom? Why? Why did it work out this way? How come I was working for Safeway when I decided, well, I had a preacher that decided for me, that I needed to be a preacher? I laughed at him. Well, he convinced me. And as a result, I ended up at Harding College. I became a preacher. How come? Why, Lord? But there have been things, you know, that haven't turned out so well. I mean, Lord, why am I going through this? Why? But experience told me something. And it told me something important, and that is important about God. And you know, I want to use a couple of examples in closing. You remember the story of Joseph. His brother sold him. And he was taken down into the land of Egypt. He ended up in prison, but he got out of prison because of God's providence. And then there was a famine in the land of Egypt, and when that famine got so bad, Jacob sent his sons down into the land of Egypt to get food. And who do they appear before? Well, it was Joseph, their brother. And here it's because of the experience and because of what had happened through the years, he comes to this conclusion in the 45th chapter. And now do not be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life. And God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant in the earth and to keep you alive by a great deliverance. Now, therefore, it was not you who sent me here, but God. And he has made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all of his household and ruler over all the land of Egypt. Oh, yes, what you did was wrong. I suffered because of what you did. But now I know why. God sent me here to preserve the land. Not the land, but to preserve the nation of Israel itself. Now, one more, and that's in the case of Job. You remember Job was a rich man. He lost everything. His wife said, "Why don't you curse God and die?" And he said, "Well, you know, God has only done good by me. But yet he suffered all of these things, and he has some friends, and they sit down and they philosophize and they begin to think, "Well, Job, you've done this or you've done that." And Job says, "No, I didn't." And then Job has a conversation with God. And in the 38th chapter, then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, "Who is this that darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Now gird up your loins like a man, and I will ask you, and you instruct me. Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? Tell me, if you have understanding." And then he begins to tell Job about the various wonderful things that he had created. And then he comes down to the 40th chapter, and then the Lord answered Job and said, "Will a fault finder contend with the Almighty? Let him who reproves God answer it." Then Job answered the Lord and said, "Behold, I am insignificant. What can I reply to you? I lay my hand on my mouth. I'm not talking anymore. Once I have spoken, I will not answer. Even twice, I will add no more." Then the Lord answered Job out of the storm and said, "Now gird up your loins like a man. I will ask you, and you instruct me. Will you really annul my judgment? Will you condemn me that you may be justified?" And then he comes to the last chapter and he says, Job answers the Lord, "I know that thou canst do all things, and that no purpose of thine can be thwarted. Who is this that hides counsel without knowledge? Therefore I have declared that which I did not understand, things too wonderful for me, which I did not know. Hear now, and I will speak. I will ask you, and you instruct me." And here's the wonderful thing about it now. "I have heard of thee by the hearing of the ear, but now my eyes see. Therefore I retract and I repent in dust and ashes." What is he saying? Finally, it's dawned on me what was going on. I was answering when I didn't understand. They were talking and they didn't understand. But now, my eyes see and my ears hear and I understand. That's what I have come to the conclusion is, when we experience God in our lives, we begin to understand God. And once we understand God, then we can say, "I can see. Now I understand." The story will continue in regard to Hosea, because the story tonight is going to be one that you really see the heart of God and why Hosea experiences in his own life. Because once you understand, then the message comes clear. The door is open. There's a day coming when you will no longer call God Baalah, but you're going to call him Ishi. Now, if you don't know what Baalah and Ishi mean, that means nothing to you. But if you're interested, I can tell you what you can do. If you've got a Bible dictionary, you go home, you look up those two words, and you see what the message is tonight. The invitation is offered. The Lord, you know, he's full of compassion. I mean, he's going to discipline us. For whom the Lord loves, he disciplines and scourges every son whom he receives. Why does he do it? Because he loves us. If you're here, you need to respond to this invitation of the Lord. Will you not come as together?